to try a very simple first question. How are you? How do you feel?
Good. I mean, you know, the certainly better than the like in 2014 when I was in Europe and had suffering from the neck situation, and I had the surgery in July of that year, and so that's doing far better now. It's always an issue, you know, because it started in the 90s. In 1996, I injured my neck on stage in Berlin, and I had the first surgery in 2000, and we knew someday it was coming again. It's just amazing how rapidly it crashed when it did, and it was even to the point where I was losing control of my right hand and my picking patterns and stuff, so it got kind of scary. And I went to a doctor in Germany from reading Tony Iommi's book, actually, that he mentioned in the book, and I called management, and I said, get me an appointment with this guy. So we did, and he did a special therapy on me, on 10 injections a day on my neck and in my arm and my wrist and everything. But he did the films, he did an MRI, and he said, you need to be very careful, because you could give yourself one wrong move, whiplash, and you're paralyzed permanently. So it's like, really, John, you got to be careful. But he got me through another probably 4 months or so of touring, and then it started to crash again. And at that point, we had to cancel some of the festivals that we had booked for that summer. I was booked the surgery for September, and it got my hand started. It was like it's going again, and the loss of control. So we ended up doing it in July. Like it got to be like I have to do this now. So.
So now when you're on stage, one way or the other, in the back of your mind, you always keep the fact you have better be careful, so move you cannot do anymore? Or
I can move. I haven't been headbanging for many years. It's really not about that. It's almost more about the traveling, the amount of flying, because flying is actually pretty tough. The way the angle of the seat is, it puts my head in a really not good position. The amount of flying also is important. I've got to be able to rest and to relax every now and then, and I don't really do that for myself very often. So it's one of those things that it's a lifestyle, it's a diet change and a kind of a lifestyle change, and really focusing on health and fitness and stuff in a different way than I had before.
So it's more on, not especially on your job or your what you do on stage. It's more on the side. You have to be careful of yourself.
Yeah,
on the side.
I have to be careful on stage too, but I mean it's pretty much just everywhere. It's always about just making better decisions and trying to, you know, I'm one of those guys that when I get focused on something, I just won't stop, I have a habit of working until my body just says, hey, I'm breaking, it's time for you to stop, you know, whatever case that might be. And sometimes it takes a lot of years for it to happen, but I've learned after this situation. And I've been training really heavy in Wing Chun Kung Fu, and my Sifu has become like a really important part of my life. And we've been working together for a few years, and he helped me tremendously after the surgery. And that idea of the importance of relaxing and letting your body heal is important. And the problem is, when you're in a band and you do what we do, you're always in fight or flight. Your system is always on stress because, you know, you're traveling, you're doing the shows, your adrenaline's going, and you're traveling through the night, you're getting on an airplane, and then even if you stop that and you immediately go into songwriting, then you have the pressure from the songwriting and then the studio pressure, and it becomes a pretty intense thing. And it's important to be able to try to find balance somehow in there, and that's something I'm working on, you know.
Okay, so one way or the other, could the idea that you would need some way or the other stop doing music, or just maybe you become a studio project, something, cross your mind, or you don't we'll see how we can cope the situation right now, and we'll see in the future.
Yeah, I mean, we are coping with the situation. I mean, I'm doing really well, don't get me wrong. I think it's about being smart about how we do things. You know, we were the schedule, the 3 years before all this happened, was we did two studio albums and a live DVD and 350 shows-ish in 3 years. That's intense. And like literally flying all over the planet constantly and going from one project into another. That's a lot. That's really a lot.
That's intense too much now? Or intense, it must be organized another way?
We won't do it that way. That was bad on all of us, actually. Because of my neck situation, I ended up in surgery, but the whole band was burnt out completely. I mean, by the time we got to the U.S. leg of Plagues of Babylon, we were exhausted. And you can see YouTube footage where the band's just like, and it's too much. You know, you have to take, if you do shorter, like we would do 2 months of touring, go home for a week, 3 months of touring, go home for 2 weeks, and that's too much. You can go out and do 20 or 30 shows, but then go home for a month, you know, and then do it again. It needs to be planned better. It was my former management had us really working to the very edge. Yeah.
All right. So in fact, if I would try to summarize this whole period with management issues, your neck issues, lineup change, everything, it's like, it seems to be what doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah, totally, man. That's right. And you know, this is a milestone in the history of the band. You know, this is our 12th record. That's cool to be able to say that. It's also the end of our recording contract. So you know, we're free, and that this whole my plan of building the headquarters to have Independence Hall to be able to make it so that we have a place to run the business from, to store all of the gear, the archives of the band, to do our albums, for everybody to stay there whenever the time comes, you know, when different members are flying in to record their parts, or when we're there together to rehearse for a tour in North America, whatever the case is, it's a place that we can do our own thing in the future. And we will never get into another slavery model of the music business. You know, those days are done. So,
and so without asking any business secrets, which is not obviously none of my business, do you have full control of your backlog, of your songs and everything? Or you have some label that could do stuff in your back without you?
Totally. That's the bad thing about it. They have all of the, it's not a good situation. That's why it's been really hard, you know, through the years, and people don't understand all the details of what I've had to endure to keep this thing moving forward. And if you look at the title and even the artwork to a degree, it's kind of like in defiance, fuck you, you're trying to burn me, you know, it's not going to happen because we're moving forward. And that is in the spirit of this album completely. You know, we could have put out a shitty record as our last album, knowing that they're going to own that master forever, but that's not the way we roll, man. I mean, we want to do a good record for us and for our fan base and make a statement. You know, there's more coming. And
so you don't know who you will work with for the future, but you know that it would be on your conditions and not the business.
Absolutely.
Condition.
Yeah, because we are the brand. You know, it doesn't matter what the label says. And the thing is, with the industry collapsing and the record companies having really struggling in a big way, the old model is dead, you know. So
So you think about going fully independent, offering, you know, selling directly your music, without, or you need the structure to be able to release worldwide. Put even in, I mean, physical shops, and don't know if so much people now, people order online, Amazon, everything.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you even need this distribution structure anymore.
That has been discussed, and at the end of the day, you know, we'll see, because these discussions are going to go on. I think we can still work with in any given territory, maybe a specific label, but only as a you know, maybe marketing and distribution, and their piece will be no ownership, and for a very short period, and you know, it's going to be that kind of a situation, but it's going to be taken on a territory by territory basis, probably, you know.
So you're open now to any offer, and you'll see what's the best for you in the band.
That's right.
Yeah, good to know. So if basically, which was the first song you wrote for Incorruptible?
Actually, I think musically the first one was The Relic. That might have been the very first one. It wasn't called that. It was just a piece of music that I was working on, and I really completed the entire arrangement. And I was talking to Stu at some point, you know, not super early in the process, but pretty early. And I said, hey, man, I'm I knew what I wanted to write about, like subject matter wise, lyrics, the direction I wanted to go in, the songs I was going to work on. I said, what are you thinking? What are you feeling? Because I have to create the music for that. You got to give me something that inspires me. And so he told me this story that he had this idea for the song called The Relic. And I said, hey, man, I think I have something for you on that one. I think I have a pretty cool piece of music, and I'll send it to you. Check it out. He heard it. He loved it. Said it was perfect. So, but that, I think that was like the first full arrangement that I did on this album cycle. After I got the studio wired up and everything, I'm pretty sure that was the one.
With your experience, does this first song give some, like, shine some lights on what would be the album, or it's just one piece among 10, 20, 11?
It's one piece, really. I mean, what I really look for, man, is that when I know, okay, we're on, it's happening, is the first song. When I know that I've written the opener, and usually that is somehow defined by the intro, or at least the energy. We haven't always had an intro. Sometimes it just starts off with a song, but it always tells me, you know, that's the opening song. You know what I mean? And now I've got something to run with to frame everything. But the only thing that was contrived was that I said that there will not be a theme or a concept.
Yeah, it's not a concept album, right?
Yeah, so and not even a theme record, you know, where like Glorious Burden was about battles, and Horror Show was you know, based on horror movies, and Dystopia was on dystopian novels and movies and all that shit. This is like a collection of songs, and I've been thinking, I think the first album was the last one that was just songs that weren't related to each other, so that was the only decision that was made. Then the rest of it was just about the energy flowing. And then, like I said, I mean, one of the ideas Stu had was the Great Heathen Army. And I said, yeah, that's cool. I can get behind doing something that's Viking related for sure. And then he said we should write one about our brotherhood. And I said, that's a great idea. I'll come up with the music for that. And I came up with this, like, an anthem, hard rock anthem thing. And then when he came, we sat in the control room and we wrote the lyrics together. So, you know, and then I had the idea of doing the song about the pirates and Clear the Way, and, I mean, pretty much all the others. Mm-hmm. The ghost dance thing was, you know.
Because I thought it might have been a Great Hands and Harmony, because it's a song you played late last year.
Yes.
Live.
Mm-hmm.
The feedback you would get from the crowd could have make you decide to withdraw the song from the record if you know. For you, it was good to test it live, to give some new shit to the audience.
Yeah, it was already done. I mean, it was already, the album wasn't done, but the decision was done that's going to be the opener. And I mean, if they would have been throwing stuff at us, maybe I would have not decided not to. But I knew that wasn't going to happen. We had a great reaction to it. It's, you know, some people were like, "Dude, that's really bold and a risky move when you don't have a record out." And I said, "Yeah, but so what? It's, why not? I mean, people." You know, we need to let people know that, because there was a period where there wasn't much happening for the band.
Yeah, people you might have said, what's the future of Isolus if Johnny's on the side?
Yeah, so that's, the, you know, and I was working, believe me, really hard behind the scenes, building, I bought the buildings, building the headquarters, you know, we went through.
Yeah, but it's hidden from the, you announce that when it's over.
Right.
Or you can give some bits in between the process, but it's difficult to announce that openly when it's, in progress.
Exactly. So, you know, I just felt like it would be we did headline the Bangerhead Festival in Germany. We did the 70,000 tons cruise. So we did a few shows. And then once we committed to doing the Headbangers Ball Festival, I hoped that the album would have been finished by then. But the thing is, all the construction took longer. And then that means that my writing and the arranging and all that started later. And so we just got off schedule. But by the time the Headbangers Ball tour happened, the pre-production and the arrangement and everything of the album, it was done. So we did that tour, had a short break for Christmas, and then master tracking. We only did 20 days of master tracking in January. So,
is there on this record any, and I don't say that in a negative way, leftovers ideas from Plagues?
No, there is none.
And it's your philosophy to start from scratch for each record, or you keep in the bank stuff, idea on your cell phone, you have tons of ideas.
I have, I have tons of ideas, right. And, you know, but I really, the thing is, I rarely ever go back to them. You know, there may be a day that I do that. I don't know. I actually always feel fortunate up to this point that I'm inspired when it starts, and I don't really need to look for something.
And you decide, okay, I work, it goes, the flow comes, or it's just, you think it's a fresher creativity, give you some fresher songs? When you decide not to come back with what some idea you thought might have been interesting in the past, and you decide, let's start from scratch?
Well, I mean, no, but the thing is, a lot of these ideas have been bubbling in my head for years. I mean, yeah. Clear the Way has been an idea. I wanted to write a tribute to the Irish Brigade for at least 15 years, but I never sat down and started to do it. I never wrote anything down. But it's been there, you know, cooking. And that's the way that it happens. Ghost Dance is the same way. The Native American tribute thing, I've wanted to do that for years. It's just...
Clear the Way, who's in the where is the source? It's, you want to write about this battle, and especially the Irish part, and you decide, okay, I'll write about that, or the music, or the riff, or the rhythm makes you think about that, and so, you know, what's the first thing? Music or lyrics?
The lyrics are always last. Always. I might scratch down a lyrical passage at some point during the process, but because the music dictates what the melodies are going to be and what the cadence of the melody is going to be, you know that if you write some lyrical thing now, you're going to have to edit it to fit the song. So there's no point, I don't bother committing to a set of lyrics until the music's done, because the way I write, the music always comes first. And pretty much everybody I know, they do that too. You get ideas. The theme, that's something else. The theme of a song. I committed to writing a song about the Irish Brigade early.
You have a song about the battles, or one way or the other. I suppose you want to kind of give the feelings of the battle, maybe the sound of the riffle, the rhythm of the, you know. So you have the idea, yeah. But the real lyrics, it will be written at the end.
Totally, yeah. Yeah, because it's always, my job is to create the soundscape, the landscape of whatever theme the song's going to be, so that you could hear these songs without any lyrics or vocals and still get an idea that that's what he's trying to say. Mm-hmm. It's a soundtrack.
Yeah.
And you know, it's, I always try to tell people that if you watch a horror movie or you watch a drama or you watch any of these things and you mute the soundtrack, it's not going to have the same effect at all. Because the music gets to us at a subconscious level, and then in a music production, it's Stu's job to sell that, and that's my job as a producer, is to push him to go over the top with the delivery so that you're bringing people into it, you know. And I did it with Matt, and I've done it with everybody, and those things are part of the whole, you know. The singer's got to be the actor. He has to be, whether he writes the lyrics or not, he needs to own those. He needs to believe what he's singing, because he needs to make me believe it. And if I believe it, then people are going to believe it on the outside world. But he's got to convince me, and that's what my job is there to push him to do, you know. And the music is always determining what the vocal does, you know, what kind of atmosphere. You know, you don't have an intro like The Veil and have death metal screaming on it. It doesn't make any sense, you know. So,
as you mentioned, you managed production for the album. Both for engineering, mixing, and mastering, you trusted Christopher Harris.
Yes.
The question might be stupid, but it's from a non-professional musician. With your experience, why don't you manage that also? What's the added value of this gentleman?
Well, the problem is, like, I did do some of the engineering on this record as well. I'm not a great engineer. I mean, I can do a really great job. If you heard the demos, they sound actually pretty amazing. I have to admit, especially on this album, now I have my own place, my setup, and, you know, it allowed me the time to do that. But I want to focus on getting the best out of the band when they're performing their parts. And if I'm sitting there having to run a computer and punch them in and out and think about the technical parts, and then I can't, it takes me away from the ability to really focus on their performances and to push them in the right direction. So I've always done, I've been involved in every production with Iced Earth. It's just that sometimes it's been with Jim Morris at my side, you know, and him engineering and then putting his input in, or his brother Tom in the really old days. You know, it just depends. But this was it's too much, and I don't, in my studio I don't have the ability to mix right now. I mean,
okay,
we can do a mix, but I need to still do work on the control room, and I would need to invest in some more outboard gear that I don't have. And
you plan to do, or
I do plan to get the control room to where it's really dialed in. After this record, I know what we need to do differently, but this album sounds killer. And mm-hmm. And I really enjoyed working with Chris, man. So, you know, as far as mixing, I don't know that I really want to do that. I mean, I'm always there. And on this album, I came in the last 4 days, and him and I did several FaceTime calls. He was sending me files, and, you know, is this the right direction? I'd give him my input, and then we went back and forth quite a bit, and then I flew out there and sat there with him and made final adjustments.
Yeah, so you know what you want. You know what you need.
Yeah. And but, you know, it's really the to will I get to the point where I actually want to do that? I don't know, man, because it's a different it's nice to have somebody's input, and being a really great engineer is a different, it's a very different mindset than being really artistic, you know. Sometimes those two cross, but sometimes they don't.
So for the artwork of the album, you decided to work with a new artist, not Cantor anymore, but Roy Young and David Newman Stump.
Yes.
One of the two is tattoo artist.
He is my tattoo artist, yeah. David is, yeah.
Why this team?
You know, the cool thing is, Dave did... He was involved with the artwork on Framing Armageddon and Crucible of Man, and he did my Sons of Liberty stuff. And Roy Young has been a friend of mine for many, many years, and we got reconnected because he came to see the band in Phoenix on the Plagues of Babylon tour, and he was one of the guys that colored the Dark Saga album cover.
Okay.
So we met way back when he worked for Todd McFarlane. And Roy is an amazing colorist. I mean, he's worked for Chaos Comics and Marvel and all
top notch companies.
He does very top shelf stuff. And he's a metalhead. He's a musician himself. He loves Iced Earth. And he's like, man, I really want to do some work for you again. And I said, cool. Well, I was talking to Dave. I was talking to a few guys about doing the pencils and the inks. And, you know, Dave delivered some cool ideas, and well, the ideas were mine, the concept was mine, and the set being on the pinnacle and the positioning and everything. Mm-hmm. But Dave did I went and met with him at the tattoo shop, and he did like a sketch while I was standing there, and we looked on the internet for reference material about the positioning, and then he put together a pretty cool sketch for me, and I thought, yeah, do that, you know, dial it in even more, and he did it really tight, and I said, okay, you got it, man. So he...
Because if you watch at the dealers, you can see the quality of the work, but compared to other cover artworks, even the previous ones, Plagues of Babylon, it's pretty simple. You have one obvious situation, one character in the front, mm-hmm. That's it. Compared to the other one where you have characters all around, it's pretty simple one.
Yeah.
One way or the other, maybe unconsciously, you wanted the message to be crystal clear, and so you just focus on this simple image?
Sort of. You know, the thing is, when people see the whole layout, they'll see that they're because it's kind of funny, on the set are sort of a mascot. I mean, he's been on several covers. Yeah. He's on the cover, he's on the centerfold, and he's on the back cover. And that doesn't really have anything to do with the lyrics at all. But it's so when you see the centerfold piece of artwork, then you'll see a bigger image of what's happening to him.
Right. So you have the whole picture.
Yeah, that's the so it's just sort of a this is a I didn't want to give too much away, and then when Roy sent me the first coloring job, he had some different background ideas, and then he sent me one that was just totally black, and I'm like, man, that's cool because that doesn't really say what's happening, and my whole vision for the centerfold, then it gives it more impact. And then when you see the back cover, that's very detailed but pretty brutal, and it's pretty cool. So,
all right, yeah. So
and then all of the artwork in this is amazing. I mean, every panel, and there's like 10 pieces of art for all the songs, and I would say 7 out of 10 could be album covers. I mean, it's really, really top shelf stuff. These guys did an amazing job.
All right. Just the last two questions. If we come back to the beginning of our discussion, you mentioned that with experience and now also you have to take care of yourself, you change your behavior and the way you behave even on tour. You integrate a new young guitar player.
Yes.
Much for 20 in his early 20s or 20,
25. He just turned 25. Yeah.
Which could even if he has some experience with previous band, be in the mood, you know, to be like heavy metal life on tour, drinking, crazy party all night long, where he might be a little outside your frame, where you have to, with experience and age, and make sure yourself you can continue on long term, be on a different frame, I would say. So how do you? There's no like shock of culture between this young guy, which is maybe craving for fame and more, and you being more experienced and being more careful about.
Jake did the tour with us in December, and I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, like. We party sometimes.
Yeah, I don't think you become like quiet and still in heavy. Obviously, you're still in the heavy metal world and part of it. So
yeah, I mean, the thing is, Jake respects me and he's a good guy. And yeah, he likes to party sometimes too. But I am the boss, and so that's the other side of it, and everybody knows that. But that doesn't. But they. We do have a great relationship. There's a lot of love and respect between us, and Jake fits really well with the band. I mean, surprisingly, like when he came to do his in-person audition, Stu happened to be there, and we knew him because he was in White Wizard, but not really well, and so it was just the feeling is really good, and then going out and doing a pretty significant tour with him. You know, he brings good energy to the situation. He's really loyal. He's a very, very talented player, and he has great original ideas. So I think he came into the process too late. The album was already written and arranged and everything this time. So, you know, but he will contribute on the next album. That I'm certain, because there's a couple parts that he played me that I really love. So, I mean, it's one of those things that, I don't really concern myself with that too much, because for one thing, I want the guys to have fun. You know, I want them to party and to enjoy this. It's really important that everybody has a good time. You know, if there's a situation where if I need to rest or Stu needs to rest, we respect that. You know, I mean, if somebody's not doing well, if somebody's sick, we look after each other. I mean, we take care of each other. So that's really I'm not even worried about that. Mm-hmm. And Jake, if he's ambitious and wants to go off and do his own thing someday, then more power to him, man. I mean, I want anybody to be in this band as long as they want to be in the band and as long as they do a good job and do what they say they're going to do. You know, people always come under the assumption that I'm a terrible guy to work with and I must be really brutal. I'm a really hard guy to work with if you are not honest, if you aren't reliable, if you're a fuck-up, we have a problem.
Yeah.
If you are committed to this and you are there for the good of the whole machine, do your job, then I'm good with that.
All right.
And it's not even about whether it's a personal situation. Sometimes people have big issues in their personal life. And Brent's been in and out of the band I don't even know how many times for the last 20 years. But I love Brent. He's always going to be a brother. And it's the same with Troy. Troy, it was my friend 10 years before he joined Iced Earth, and he'll be my friend for the rest of my life. But he just had a very stressful part of his life, thing happen in his life, and he has to deal with that. And that's, I mean, he's, you know, Troy lives 20 minutes from me, and we're in contact by text almost every day. We're very close. So it's, you know, it's just, there's different circumstances for all of it. And I just want my guys to be, committed to the vision, and if that means that someday Jake wants to go and do his own thing, then he's free to do that. You know, that's more power to him.
All right, and just my last question. Year after year, you developed a distinctive sound. I think you could hear a song from Isis, or even you blindly you listen Demon and Wizard, and you know it's you. One way or the other, you know it's you. How does that make you proud? One way or the other, you don't care or. You say that my little mark on the history of music, or not music, or heavy metal, or my little bubble of.
I mean, it makes me proud. I think it's it's important to be able to brand yourself, but I think it really goes beyond the guitar playing. I mean, that's the guitar is just a...
But that's the first contact you have with your music. Obviously, it's the whole structure, it's the way you organize things, the mix of melody and heaviness, or aggressive and melodic.
Yeah, the guitar is one of the tools I use to write with. Sometimes I write on a bass or whatever, but maybe even a keyboard part inspires something. But it's a... I think I hope that my real stamp is that I was able to have a definable sound based on the songs that I write. And you're right. I mean, you're right. It is about the musical structures. The guitar might be the first thing that you notice, but, I mean, it's what I'm lucky enough or fortunate enough, have worked hard enough to be able to say that I've established something that's uniquely, it's a brand. It's something that you know when you hear it, you know what it is. And I sometimes get attacked for that because people, I would imagine that they're frustrated musicians, jealous. I don't know what the deal is. I've never had enough time to sit back and criticize some other band in that way. It just doesn't even enter my mind. But, I'd say if you look at pretty much every legendary band, they have a sound. You can hear
trademark.
It's a thing. It's a and
you notice them.
Yep. And regardless of the changes, and that's what I mean about being Iced Earth. The vision of Iced Earth has been incorruptible since the beginning, regardless of the challenges that have come. Whether it's brutal contracts, rip off from management, fucking, personal tragedy, whatever. It's the commitment's been there, and I've always stayed focused on that, regardless. So. That is something I can say that I'm proud about, and I've never deceived myself, and therefore I've never deceived the fans.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. You're welcome.